This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Mario Ritter Jr. in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Elections are the way out, and the army doesn't seem to have any political ambition. But the problem is that the elections cannot be organized in the current circumstance in a way that will please the crowd.
That's William Lawrence, professor of political science, discussing the political crisis in Algeria. Also, we have the latest on elections in Malawi, and fuel prices again rise sharply in Zimbabwe. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Forty-six Algerian trade unions and associations are urging the army to work with representatives of civil society organizations and the political class to find a solution that responds to popular demands related to the elections planned for July 4th. Army Chief Lieutenant General Ahmed Gayed Salah says everyone should know that the military has no political ambitions and that elections are the best way to overcome Algeria's political crisis and to avoid a constitutional vacuum. With the two sides sticking to their positions, the crisis in Algeria does not seem to have a clear path forward. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy spoke with William Lawrence, professor of political science at George Washington University, about the latest developments in Algeria.
The protest movement in Algeria has been largely amorphous and leaderless. So the fact that the civil society organizations are banding together to protest the elections means that the protest movement is taking some shape, and this is significant in terms of the state-society dialogue going forward in the future. But for now, we don't have a clear path forward because the army is focused on holding elections and the protesters are focused on total systemic change top to bottom. So there is really isn't a clear set of things that the two sides could agree on to get out of the impasse.
The Army Chief, Lieutenant General Ahmed Gayed Salah, said today, "We have no political ambitions." And earlier he said elections are the best way to overcome Algeria's political crisis and avoid a constitutional vacuum. With the two sides sticking to their original positions, how would the crisis end in Algeria?
First of all, let me say that the general is correct. Elections are the way out, and the army doesn't seem to have any political ambitions. But the problem is that the elections cannot be organized in the current circumstance in a way that will please the crowd, in part because the voter rolls are very suspect, with a lot of Algerians that might be able to vote not on them, and a lot of dead Algerians still on them. Algerians talk frequently about a zombie electors voting for a zombie president. And there's a long history of elections that are not free and fair, that are manipulated by the government, with candidates getting excluded by the government, which gets to the issue of the Electoral Commission and the Constitution, because the protesters would like a new reorganized electoral authority, new voter rolls, and, of course, a new constitutional basis for that, and maybe elections in a year or year and a half. So it seems that the army is sort of rushing towards a solution rather than looking for systemic change, and that the army sees the issue as essentially a question of personnel and replacing, let's say, more corrupt personnel with cleaner personnel to solve the problem, whereas the protesters see this as a fundamental systemic change needing to happen, and certainly aren't getting offered that by the military.
The Interior Ministry announced that the up-to-date total number of the submission of individual signature application forms for the 4th of July presidential elections has reached 74 application forms, without providing the names of these candidates. Could such number of unknown figures in Algeria spoil the proposed elections?
Well, certainly, obviously, a large number of candidates can dilute it. If the approvals of candidates are not clean, then you could have the wrong candidates being approved and other candidates being excluded. But the number itself really isn't the issue at hand, and as long as there's a runoff at the end of the process, you know, the most popular candidates should emerge. But that's not really the issue right now. The issue is that the population won't participate in the elections as currently constituted. And then we have a situation like we have in a number of neighboring countries of elections being held for systemic and constitutional purposes with very low turnouts. And that's a real issue because these election results would not have any legitimacy if most of the potential voters don't show up to vote. And so the most important thing at this point is that the army figure out a way to have a much higher turnout, and that would probably be by postponing the elections and reorganizing the electoral system in a way that meets international standards and is viewed as free and fair.
That was VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawy speaking with William Lawrence, professor of political science at George Washington University. Sudan's ruling military council and civilian protest groups remain divided over who will lead the country as it transitions to civilian-led government. Several protest groups are being represented by the Forces for the Declaration of Freedom and Change. It is insisting on limited military representation in a new sovereign council. However, the military wants to lead the new body that would lead the 3-year transition. The military council said yesterday that the two sides cannot agree on who should be on the new body and who should lead it. The two sides said Tuesday that talks would continue, but no date has been set. The United States, Britain, and Norway have released a statement urging a transition to civilian leadership. The nations said that if primary authority for governing is not placed with civilians, it will be harder for them to work with Sudan and support its economic development. Protesters are still holding a mass sit-in near the military headquarters in the capital, Khartoum. They have been there since shortly before longtime President Omar al-Bashir was ousted last month by the military. Protesters are calling for a general strike if the military does not meet their demands. The military has warned against any further unrest, adding that it's ready to keep order. This Friday, Kenya's High Court is set to rule soon on a case challenging colonial-era laws that criminalize homosexuality. The petitioners want the court to declare those laws unconstitutional. They hope that life will be easier for the country's gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community. Rael Umbor files this report from Nairobi.
Stanley Mwasa, a gay man living in Kenya, says going to parties or events alone is always a risky affair. It is safer if he's in a group of 2 or 3 people, he says. In the past, he has been attacked by strangers, an experience shared by many gay and lesbians in Kenya, he says. He is hoping that on Friday, Kenya's High Court will overturn the law that he says has fueled homophobia for decades. The law he refers to are the sections of the penal code that make gay sex a crime.
There is no way someone is going to traumatize you, yet you have a right to go to any police station or any facility that gives justice. It will change. Everything will change. Even the police officers, the way they carry KPs, it will have to change.
In 2016, 3 Kenyan gay rights organizations filed petitions with the High Court asking it to declare sections 162A and C and sections 165 of the Penal Code unconstitutional. The organizations argue the laws violate the rights to privacy, the rights to freedom of expression, the rights to health, the rights to human dignity, and the right to freedom from discrimination. Court hearings began in February 2018. Otieno Namoya is a researcher at Human Rights Watch. He says the laws, which date from 1930, infringe on LGBT rights and deny them access to medical services or police protection.
Even Kenya's own constitution outlaws discrimination of any kind. So It is illegal to allow discrimination on the basis of religion, on the basis of tribe, on the basis of race, on the basis of sexual orientation. So it is a contradiction for the Constitution to say on the one hand that any form of discrimination is illegal, but on the other, we retain laws that actually discriminate against one section of the people.
Irungu Kang'ata is a Kenyan senator and a vocal opponent of gay rights who is also participating in the case. He says if the court strikes down the laws, he and his supporters will seek other avenues to stop what he calls the LGBT agenda.
We either appeal, but I foresee little chances of success in our judiciary, because I strongly believe our judiciary has been captured by non-governmental organizations. So the best case scenario would be to push for a referendum to amend certain article of the Constitution so that it's very clear that such behavior is not allowed in Kenya.
If the petitioners win, Kenya will be the first country in East Africa to decriminalize homosexuality. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
Fuel prices in Zimbabwe have jumped 50% less than 6 months after a dramatic 150% increase angered people and prompted street protests that turned bloody. Reporter Kudzai Zvenevashi has more details.
On Monday, a liter of petrol was going for 3 RTGS dollars 36 cents, and diesel was going for 3 RTGS dollars 20 cents. Today, a liter of fuel costs 4 RTGS dollars 97 cents, and diesel is pegged at 4 RTGS dollars 89 cents. The price hikes come after the central bank Monday announced that it would not be sourcing foreign currency for oil marketing companies as they have done in the past. The fuel companies now should be getting the foreign currency they need from the interbank foreign currency exchange market. Munyara Zidodo is the editor of Open Parli, an online publication that covers parliament and political developments. He explains the initial arrangement between the central bank and the fuel companies.
What was happening in the past was that the oil companies, whether they were getting RTGS and bond, that money was treated as if it was equal to the US dollar. So they had maintained the 1:1 exchange rate.
The local RTGS dollar currency introduced in February is trading at 3.4 against the American dollar. Dodo adds that since oil companies have to get into the interbank foreign exchange market to get their foreign currency at the prevailing market rates, the increase is justified. Isaac Moyo is a civil servant and a motorist. He says the new price hikes leave people in a difficult situation.
What I say is the prices are not reasonable considering the economy, the salaries. We are civil servants. We can't afford that. So basically we're going to park our cars until they resolve the price issue.
Eddie Cross is an economist and a former lawmaker. He says the central bank's action is welcome.
I think it is a move in the right direction. I'm hoping it's carefully coordinated with the Minister of Finance's offices. And I hope also it means that the Reserve Bank is not going to continue sweeping currency into its own nostro accounts.
Cross says the central bank has been taking most of the foreign currency from exporters and allocating it to critical sectors. He says the change will inspire price hikes for cooking oil, pharmaceuticals, and other critical goods and services. He is, however, hopeful that this will be short-lived and the economy will soon stabilize. Since the interbank foreign exchange market has had lower exchange rates compared with the black market has become the source of choice for those seeking to change their US dollars. Cross says the interbank foreign currency exchange market should be left to self-regulate so it can attract the much-needed foreign currency. Dodo says the civil servants and other Zimbabweans who have no access to US dollars will be the most affected by the price hikes. Ironically, government buses in urban centers reduced their fares on Tuesday. a move many think is meant to prevent private transport operators from hiking their fares. Going forward, Cross says when the economy stabilizes, increasing people's wages should be high on the agenda. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashi from Harare.
White farmers in South Africa are increasingly anxious as the ruling African National Congress, or ANC, forges ahead with its plan to expropriate land without compensating its legal owners. The ANC says it will take farmland owned by whites to redistribute to blacks if it deems this to be necessary to tackle the imbalance in land holdings caused by the system known as apartheid. Many white farmers are disappointed, arguing that they've been practicing land reform for decades without recognition from the government. Darren Taylor reports on the third part of his series on land reform.
In 2005, dairy farmer Judy Stewart met three young men at a cattle show in the KwaZulu-Natal region. The trio demonstrated great knowledge about the animals. They told Stewart about their dreams of becoming commercial cattle farmers, but they didn't have the money to attend agricultural college.
I said, well, what are you going to do? Because they had this tremendous passion. They were handling heifers very well. They represented the province at national level. And they said, well, we'll probably have to just go home and do nothing.
Stewart says she was sick and tired of seeing such talent go to waste. She employed as many potential farmers as possible as apprentices. Demand for her mentorship was so high that she began asking surrounding farmers to give work to her students.
There were times when I spent a whole day in my car driving from farm to farm, and I didn't find a single farmer who would take on one of our apprentices at minimum wage.
Through sheer persistence, Stewart eventually found white farmers willing to help. Her initial one-woman aid operation has since transformed into the Future Farmers Foundation. It connects mostly disadvantaged black youngsters who show aptitude for agriculture with farmers all over the world. The apprentices learn from them and work for them. Stewart emphasizes that her organization isn't a charity.
We believe that handouts do not improve your self-esteem. Doing it for yourself does. The overseas internships, we've got some really good sponsors who pay for them to go over, but they are earning money while they're interns over there and they pay it back.
Her trainees serve two-year apprenticeships in South Africa, followed by year-long internships in a foreign country. In 2018, the foundation sent 50 of them to ranches in Australia and America.
I've just had an email from someone in the Midwest in the United States to say that the girl that we sent there to do poultry is managing a 500,000 bird egg-laying unit, and she's got production to 95%, and they've never had that performance in any of their units ever.
Stewart says one of her most remarkable apprentices was a city girl who approached her and asked her to become involved in dairy farming, even though she'd never seen a dairy. The young woman had graduated from college with a full house of distinctions in subjects related to animal science, but still couldn't find a job at a dairy. Stewart soon found a farmer to employ her.
She milked cows for 3 months, she reared calves for 3 months, then she got onto tractor driving. At the end of the year, she was managing a dairy. She's a phenomenal...
Stewart believes one of the reasons land reform has so far failed in South Africa is because the government has given land to people who are not dedicated farmers.
The thing is that farming is tough, and if you don't love what you're doing, how can you succeed?
Without such training and development opportunities for budding black farmers, says Stewart, taking land from white farmers won't do anything to improve agricultural output. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Supporters of Malawi's ruling party began celebrating Wednesday in response to unofficial election results that show incumbent President Peter Mutharika in the lead. Opposition parties are not amused. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The Malawi Electoral Commission said in a statement Wednesday afternoon that it is not ready to start announcing the results from Tuesday's general elections. However, unconfirmed results announced by local radio and TV stations show Mutharika leading in most of the polling centers. This prompted members of the ruling Democratic Progressive Party to celebrate and congratulate each other through social media. Benny Peer is the campaign director for the DPP.
We would have every reason to believe in the results as it stands now, because it is only Malawians that have got to speak. And as it stands now, Malawians have spoken. Meanwhile, we are at peace.
But opposition parties took a dim view on the early celebration. Richard Chimwendo Banda is the team leader for electoral process for the main opposition Malawi Congress Party, led by Lazarus Chakwera.
It's more or less like a propaganda, a manipulation of the people's mind. We're not happy. But the good thing, as I said and I continue to highlight, is that our people on the ground have got the results. And there's not going to be any manipulation. And we're going to announce those results, which are clearly indicating who has won these elections. And it's none other than Dr. Lazarus Chakwera.
Rafiki Hajat is executive director of Policy for Interaction, a local think tank. He told VOA it is premature for any party to start claiming victory before the start of the announcement of the official results.
I think any celebration at this juncture is premature. And I would simply warn those people that he who laughs best laughs last.
The Electoral Commission says it will start announcing some partial results received so far from the country's 28 districts as soon as they are verified. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Mario Ritter Jr. in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website, voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned for the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, across the United States are numerous African diaspora associations. Many strive to preserve their culture or have advocacy goals. The role of the African diaspora in the United States.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com,
The news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.